you. The next case is Hughes.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Shelby Lemmel of Masters Law Group on behalf of the appellant Robert Hughes. If I could please reserve 3 minutes. Thank you. Your Honors, I'd like to take the maintenance issue first and then turn to the distribution of assets. This is an 18-year maintenance term in this present value of over $1.2 million. The payments are $12,000 per month for 7 years, followed by $10,000 per month for 11 years. Now, the court plainly recognized the obvious, stating this is a lot of money, this is a long period of maintenance, a lot of money, a long time. And the court explains that this is, quote, primarily because he's been married for more than 25 years. The statute provides a balancing test, and not one of those factors can trump the others or be weighted more significantly than the others. Yet this is exactly what the trial court did in placing undue emphasis on the duration of this marriage. Now, this is in conflict with this court's decisions in Vanderveen and Stenchel, in conflict with Supreme Court decisions in Moreau and Washburn. Washburn, in particular, straightforwardly says that the court will not apply formulaic approaches to maintenance awards and to property distributions. But when one factor, particularly a black and white factor, such as the duration of the marriage, trumps the others, it is exactly that type of formulaic approach that's been applied. That is an error of law. And the error that created here isn't just in the misapplication of the statute, but it results in a maintenance award that is unprecedented in this state. Now, take, for example, factor F, which requires the court to balance the party's age and health. There are findings, unchallenged, of course, that Ms. Evans was healthy and young when the maintenance obligation was imposed, when the parties divorced. Not only that she was healthy and young, but that she was employed, albeit part-time, that she was fully capable of full-time employment, that she was a valuable employee with lots of skills who could work full-time and earn more, and indeed that her ability to work more was within her control. And yet, there has never been an award like this in Washington for a person in her situation who is young, healthy, and capable of her own financial, controlling her own financial destiny. Rather, long-term maintenance awards such as this are usually handed down, as this court is well aware, in situations where the recipient spouse is ill, disabled, or incapable of working. My client, likewise, does not fit the mold, so to speak, of someone who pays this type of maintenance. Typically, and I'm referring to Hadley, Bulacek, Tomsevic, and cases like those, the party paying maintenance either receives a massively disproportionate asset distribution or has such significant separate property that he can make the maintenance payments from those sums. That's not the case here. My client, rather, will work until he is almost 68 years old, literally driving a tractor and plowing fields, and almost half of his income, on balance, once taxes and interest are accounted for, will go to his ex-wife for the next 18 years. Now, this error is compounded by the 60-40 asset distribution. And I'm not suggesting that a 60-40 asset distribution in and of itself is problematic, but one of the principal bases of this asset distribution is that my client was awarded income-producing assets. And indeed, the trial court says in Clerk's Paper 61, Findings 211 and 212, that that's one of the primary reasons for the 60-40 distribution. Yet my client explains to the trial court, to no avail, that in order to make the $650,000 equalizing payment made in the first year after the dissolution, he will have to sell or encumber the very assets he was awarded. So indeed, he doesn't get 40% at all. Any asset that has to be sold to make that transfer payment plainly reduces his 40% of the award significantly. Any asset that is encumbered likewise reduces the award significantly. An unencumbered asset is worth less, and any rental income is offset by the cost of encumbering the asset to make the payment in the first place. The 60-40 award that the trial court was striving for can't be realized because of the massive transfer payment placed upon my client within the first year.
But the transfer payment occurs because of their stipulation that he would receive all of the property. The court didn't force the property on him.
No, the court did not force the property on him, but no one predicted an 18-year maintenance award and $650,000 transfer payment. And my point is that the basis of that 60-40 split is wrong. He indeed will not receive that income, or more appropriately, the income is offset by the cost of encumbering these assets to pay the ward to begin with.
The sheer division of the property as they agreed to it put 60% of it in his hands. He had to expect making some offsetting payment.
And he certainly isn't arguing that no offsetting payment is required, but this is $650,000 in a year, and he left the marriage with about $120,000 in cash and paying half of his income in maintenance.
Yeah, my response is that he should have expected he was going to have to come up with cash to buy her out. That was implicit in the way they structured the division of the tangible assets.
He should have expected that he would have to come up with the cash in some way.
So this is about how much. Now, your briefing complaint about the inclusion of the separate property to determine the 60-40, it's a $120,000 proposition. That's the extent of his surprise?
Those are two different arguments. The court didn't, I believe you're talking about the inclusion of two separate parcels.
Moving along.
Right, Mann Road and Maupin Road, and I would argue that that exacerbates the condition. These are separate property. No one argues that they're not separate property. The court includes them in part because it says he'll have this rental income, but indeed that rental income is offset by the fact that he has to take loans to make this massive payment. So the basis for including those properties is flawed. It's additionally flawed because the court finds, and this finding is challenged, of course, that the parties anticipated that these rental properties would provide for their retirement. Nowhere does anyone suggest that premarital separate property was intended to provide for the retirement. The only testimony is that that was not my client's intent. And Ms. Evans testifies vaguely that community assets, community parcels, were intended to provide for their retirement. But these aren't community parcels. These are separate parcels.
But the court, I'm sure you'd agree, would have authority to actually award her separate property.
Absolutely, but that's not what the court intended to do here, and the intent is flawed. The court did not apparently foresee, even though it was explained, the effect that this encumbrance would have on the post-dissolution economic circumstances. This man is literally going to work until he's 68 out in a field pulling a tractor to divide his income and leave the marriage with significantly less assets than his ex-wife, and that is an untenable financial circumstance. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. Catherine Smith representing the respondent, Michelle Evans. You see a lot of these over the years, and this is it's not the usual circumstance, but it's not an unusual one. It's not typical, but it's not unusual that you have parties who had access to significant separate property assets that provided a really significant income. Mr. Hughes is here now complaining that he, you know, is going to have to drive a tractor until he's in his 60s. But the fact of the matter is that the average income he is going to receive from this significant separate property asset that he took away from the marriage is $30,000 a month.
This is the
Hughes
the
farm.
Shares from the
yes.
Hughes farm.
Yes, and that has been his income historically from this property. All of the parties said that on a realistic basis, he at most would have been entitled to an employment income of approximately $85,000 as a result of that. So this asset, which was valued by the court at $900,000, is essentially spinning off $300,000 a year for Mr. Hughes. He received that asset, as Judge Applewick has noted. I mean, be careful what you ask for. They agreed that he was going to get all of these income-producing assets, and he knew he was going to have to make an equalizing payment. Let's talk about the 60-40 split.
So with income-producing assets, it's not just the rental properties, then. It's the Hughes shares that you're referring
yeah,
to.
Yeah. Essentially, the court, Judge Cook, valued this asset at $900,000. The parties, there was testimony that Mr. Hughes' employment income, his continuing income from this, could be very optimistically valued at $85,000 a year. So if he's making $360,000 from it, some of that employment income is in fact the value of this business to him. And the court recognized that, and valued the asset at essentially the amount of money that he's making off of this. He's going to, you know, get a complete return on his investment in 3 to 4 years, and he still owns the asset. He's going to continue to do that. There's no reason to think that he won't continue to make this significant amount of money off of this family asset well into his 60s. And what the court did here is not equalize these parties' income, but recognize that after a long-term marriage, that it was appropriate to at least come close to equalizing their incomes. And we, at page 25, we did the math for the court. Even given this significant maintenance award, and we certainly concede that it's a significant maintenance award, Mr. Hughes will continue to have significantly more money per month than Ms. Evans. And he will do so because of the agreement that these parties made that he was going to get all of the income-producing assets, that there would be a distribution, a cash distribution to Ms. Evans, and that there had to be, and that the trial court recognized that with those circumstances, there also had to be some recognition of the length of the marriage and the fact that neither of them really would have met, had a significant employment income ability were it not for this family farm.
The appellant puts a lot of emphasis on the court over-applying the length of the marriage.
I don't think that is true at all. This is not, and I realized when I was reading through our briefs that I should embrace Rockwell more than I have in this briefing. Certainly the length of the marriage is something that the court can take into account. She recognized that these parties would probably continue to have some sort of employment income through their mid-60s. That's totally appropriate. She recognized that Mr. Hughes' income would be significantly greater. She did not award any portion of the asset from which he will continue to get this employment income to Ms. Evans. So there's no problem under Barnett, which is the one case in all of these cases that's cited to you in which there was a remand on a maintenance award. Every single other case is a case in which the court has affirmed awards of long-term maintenance. And this was a long-term marriage. These parties, as I was saying at the beginning of this argument, this is a case in which these parties had this significant income available to them because of one spouse's separate property. They did not acquire a large community estate. They did not acquire retirement accounts, for instance, because, as Ms. Evans testified, they thought they were going to be using these properties for retirement. And under those circumstances, it is not an abuse of discretion for the trial court to recognize that the way that you're going to equalize these parties or come close to equalizing these parties' financial circumstances at the end of what has to be admitted to be a long-term marriage is to provide for a substantial maintenance award. The trial court clearly had in mind the nature and extent of the community property, the nature and extent of the separate property, and the other factors of 080 in making its property division. It also had all of the appropriate factors under 070 for an award of maintenance in mind, and it clearly, very thoughtfully, if you read the findings, very thoughtfully looked at the combination of both maintenance and property in making the division that it did, given the assets it had available to it, given the character of those assets, and given the trial court's recognition of what these parties could expect to have in terms of income and assets from the assets that were available to it at the end of this marriage. So, yes, the court clearly did have in mind the duration of the marriage and the parties' ages and their experience and their abilities to have employment and other types of income after the end of the marriage, but that is not an abuse of discretion. And, in fact, it's required by the court. And this is not a case, as the argument was made. You got a lot of arguments after the first Rocco was decided that, it's not 25 years. You know, we can't consider this a long-term relationship. Or the other argument you would get is, it's 25 years. It doesn't matter whether the property was community or separate. This court didn't do this. It properly applied both statutes. It properly applied the analysis of Rockwell and every other case that this court has had cited to it, and it made a decision that was well within its discretion and that should be affirmed. Unless the court has further questions. Thank you.
You know, let me first briefly address the idea that my client somehow has significantly more per month, and the math referred to in the briefing. And we did the same math in our brief, and I mean, take it for what it's worth, we both came to different conclusions. If you apply the taxes, which of course my client pays taxes on his income and pays taxes on her maintenance, and you look at the court's finding predicting that she will be able to invest the money she gets and get over $2,000 a month from her investments, she's going to come out with over $12,000 a month, and my client will have about $12,500. The difference is how they get that income. She works part-time at a farm stand, while my client will work not kind of into his 60s until he is almost 70 years old, performing hard physical labor to provide a six-figure income for himself and for his ex-spouse. The only other thing I want to address on rebuttal is this sense that this should have been predicted, that because they agreed that he would keep separate property that has been in his family farm for generations, he should have foreseen this outcome and therefore has to live with it, however unjust it may be. This maintenance award is unprecedented. How do you predict an 18-year maintenance award when the recipient spouse is healthy and young and employed? It has never happened in this state. So how would he predict that?
You're asserting there's no published opinion that reflects a similar set of facts.
I am absolutely asserting that. Yeah, I think
not that it's never been ordered or paid, because I'm confident, well, I know of some higher maintenance awards for a longer period of time that have been ordered by the court.
But I think what governs the trial court's exercise of its discretion is the opinions from this court and the Supreme Court, and there is not a published opinion governing the exercise of trial court discretion that would allow my client or anyone else to predict a maintenance award like this.
Certainly the court has the discretion to award, make an uneven distribution of the property.
Yes.
Has the authority or discretion to award her separate property that he brought into the marriage.
Yes.
And here, ultimately, the property division is 60-40, at least in his favor.
Ultimately, it's not when you take into account the transfer payment and how he'll accomplish it. It's less. He gets less.
Well, I disagree with your math. I think the property division is lopsided in the favor of the husband, and I'm not saying it shouldn't be. But given that he takes more property away from the marriage and that she has dramatically less earning capacity, he certainly should have expected maintenance.
And he's not arguing that there should be no maintenance.
And the maintenance certainly doesn't equalize their monthly net incomes based on the projections of what she has.
It comes within a few hundred dollars.
It's very unusual to see this kind of argument from the one who actually did so well in the case.
Well, I would certainly disagree about how well he did and what he will have to do to provide both for himself and his spouse in the future, and the inequity and the quality of life that places these parties in.
But my point is, the court could have given her much more in the way of property, and we certainly would have upheld it.
I don't know how that award would have looked on balance, but that would be a different case. Thank you.
Thank you.